Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Whoa, it's that time. Already. All sorts of paranormal stuff going on. We've covered Sasquatch. We've covered UFOs. Pretty much all the Fortean stuff. And today we're going to get into, as a matter of fact, a revisit with Keith Linder and his poltergeist experience. And this is pretty phenomenal. So we're going to get that in just a minute. First, just like a couple of updates here real quick. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go to wendyscoffeehouse.com and catch up. I also include some sci-fi stuff in there too, just a little bit of everything. Artificial intelligence, sci-fi, UFO, paranormal, Sasquatch, the whole nine yards. And part of this, it's my life, so I'm fascinated by it. I'm curious by it. I like finding out that other people also experience this and hearing how they have dealt with it. So that's a lot of this is just, it's personal. So, and I'm not offended if you don't believe. Okay, that's okay. It's just everybody's got to come at this from their own way. The cool thing recently in the news, scientists have come up with a new way to revise a way of figuring out if somebody is out there, aliens, ET, whatever you want to call it. And this, happens to be more extraterrestrial, the Rio scale. And it just came out recently that they are doing this in a way that it will help SETI attract and track the kind of information that they can use to see if there's anything out there. And honestly, we know. There is. It's just a matter of how are we able to connect the dots and make it something that we can quantify by our standards, because our science may not be exactly what is required to get any kind of indication of life. I've been on this through this little maze when we've gone to paranormal sites and nothing registers. And yet the house or the place, the site is incredibly haunted, incredibly active, but it's not triggering any of the mechanics that we think are scientific. And so that's frustrating. So it's a matter of just connecting the dots and improving and evolving our own abilities and capabilities. So Rio 2 is going to be there, out there looking, or in here or somewhere on Earth, trying to figure out if anybody's out off of Earth. I think extra dimensional is also part of that too, but that isn't what this one's about. All right. So the other thing too was a lady, and I think this is Australia. She has this wonderful collection of ducks. Well, she had her little duck menagerie, and all of a sudden they end up missing. And she says, "Whatever it is, it was able to leave with no trace, no feathers, nothing was broken into. The ducks just kind of evaporated. However, there were two remaining ducks, and one was like a noisy quacker, and the other one's an old geezer." She said, "So whatever it was," and she's figured out that it might be aliens. I had to put that one on the blog because this one was just, it was the duck disappearance and alien forces, she says, must have just left me my two worst ducks. You know how those ducks feel. Anyway, some of the stuff like that. Stanton Friedman did his last appearance at Roswell. And that the first lecture, I didn't realize, 1967, and he's kind of the one who kicked off the whole Roswell UFO story and made it so much bigger and gave it a lot more exposure, and just, you know, going back and saying, hey, these dots don't connect. So Stanton Friedman, he said he would do some occasional public appearances, but it's time to say, hey, let's go enjoy life and not have to do interviews endlessly with all sorts of people. All right, Keith, I wanted to give you a chance to refresh everybody. You've got the book out now. We talked when you were still doing this, and it's The Bothell House, lovingly known as the Bothell Hill House. Hi, Keith. How you doing?
Hello, and thanks for having me on today.
This is something that we talked about earlier, but you've gone through and connected the dots, and this is not a light read. Okay, so for anybody getting into this, you've tried to give people a full-blown background detail of what it was like to move into a place that you absolutely had no clue ghosts existed in the first place, let alone poltergeists, and that you could ever find yourself living in a haunted house. So welcome to Reality 101 Ghost World. When you happen to fall into it, it's like, uh-oh, and no one believes you. So how'd it work?
We were thrown into it as you were, and it's totally unexpected. I'm in my late 40s now. I was in my mid-40s when this started happening. And, yeah, you just move into a brand-new house, and I wanted to start the book off to give the reader the total understanding of me and my girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, Tina, moving to a house totally unaware of what's about to take place, how it's about to control our lives, turn it upside down for about 4 years, and then just the overall response from multiple channels, family, friends, paranormal community, parapsychology community, media in general. But, so the book starts off on day one of when we moved in. And you're right, it is a very detailed book because I want to be as detailed as possible in giving the reader lots of information. There's a lot to chew on in that book.
Well, and the good thing is you had to do your research, a lot of it, because I really commend you for doing a deep dive and trying to investigate, uncover every possible stone with this, because a lot of times people just get frightened, they leave, and they have no clue what happened. They don't really want to know what happened. But with your education, you're actually able to give people a few tips with this.
Yeah, and it's going to be a few silver linings out of this. One of them is we didn't cut tail and run immediately, even though we thought about it. But the only way that we could sort of think of, me especially, of a new house occupant coming in after us, nobody deserves to be caught unaware. So, yeah, we did research. I did research. Wasn't easy. A lot of digging around, a lot of dead ends. Research with the land, the house, previous tenants.
How long did it take you to track down the previous tenant? Because that would have been helpful.
Yeah, it took about 2.5 years.
Uh-huh.
Because they came... it landed in our lap when a letter came in the mail that belonged to a previous tenant. So I just sort of threw a Hail Mary and looked up this person on Facebook because their mail was still coming to our house.
Mm-hmm.
And got lucky. And in doing so, was able to get on numerous times them confirming that, yeah, they did have that activity when they lived in the home 5 years before we arrived. But they just moved out. I mean, they had a lot of other problems, and paranormal being one of them. They never really connected the dots like we did. Most people at the sign of a small amount of activity just choose to leave, get out of Dodge real quickly. Never asking the same question again, but they were very helpful. She was very helpful in confirming a lot of what we were living through.
Well, and you try to do, in terms of being thorough, contact the paranormal groups, figuring that they might have a clue about this. And the Travel Channel Ghost Adventures came in, and then they were absolutely no help at all.
Yeah, Ghost Adventures came in, and you're right, we had reached out to a lot of paranormal teams, and just for the record, they found us. Ghost Adventures found us through local Seattle media. By that time, we had so much activity that it attracted media. And, they came in, and I documented and listed in the book the short period of time Zach and crew were in the house. And they were in the house full-on investigative mode for about 5 hours.
That's a clue.
They left the house with...
That's a clue. 5 hours. And then making an assumption and a nice detailed report on whether it is or isn't haunted.
Yeah, and then their assumption or lack of evidence thereof said that maybe either we were over-exaggerating or sort of hoaxing it all for attention. But in talking to other paranormal researchers and groups throughout the world, I've learned 5 hours is minuscule when it comes to investigating a location, especially poltergeists. Poltergeists are a phenomena within a phenomena that I've learned that nobody really knows to root cause as to when the activity is going to
Hang on, Keith. We're going to come back, and I'll give you a clue about Skinwalker Ranch, okay, in terms of 5 hours versus what happens when they really try to do some connecting of dots, and there's all sorts of activity going on. We're talking with Keith Linder, author of the, and it's the Bothell House, or the Bothell Hell House, and you're in for a very, very interesting read, and possibly a few frights if you dig into this thing late at night, all right? Coming back with more on Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, talking poltergeist. And sometimes that is a question of 1, 2, 20, 30. The deal, if you are not familiar with Skinwalker Ranch, and I've written a few things about this on the Wendy's Coffee House blog, because it is fascinating. There's a film coming out, and this is something that was done with that, you know, undisclosed secret CIA Pentagon research. And they camped at this place, the Skinwalker Ranch. That's how they call it. I think it's a Sherman Ranch, and if you read the book, it's the Gorman Ranch. But they stayed there, and they put a little trailer on site for, this was ongoing for 8 years. George Knapp is a journalist, and he studied, he was there, he was part of this. He has up-close, in-person kind of encounters to rely on, and all of the substantiating materials. They had everything. They had orbs. They had things moving that they could not account for. They had a Sasquatch sighting. They had UFOs. They had somebody who was looking through a scope and seeing through the sky of the sun setting into a place where it was still light and the sun wasn't setting, so looking into a different dimension. All sorts of stuff. Now, can they document all of that scientifically? No. Which is the great part about this. Our instruments aren't quite that sensitive. They aren't yet there in terms of getting this a real, tangible, concrete, scientific, valid definition. And yet, it happens. And it's happening at other places. And it's happening in other towns and other cities. And we're not fluent in this language yet because people still are afraid to talk about it. So that's why when Keith Linder is telling a story and giving you some background, if it ever happens to you or somebody you know, the first thing you will say won't be, "You must be imagining it. You're crazy." You'll say, "Whoa, who do you talk to about something like that?" Because Keith knows. All right, Keith. So part of it, finding out with the paranormal community, not everybody does the same kind of work. And with 5 hours, giving you that example of between 5 hours and an eight-year investigation where they got all sorts of activity, all sorts of stuff, you have to be thorough. You had 4 years.
Yeah, you have to be... You have to be thorough, and and later in the book, other teams were, and the definition of thorough for us was, you have to live in the home, and other teams camped up in the home, squatted in the home, and stayed a considerable amount of time, 3 weeks, almost a month of living there, 24/7, 7 days a week, and that's in the book as well, but yeah, that's the night and day difference between 5 hour and actually being in an environment, like you said, and doing stuff long-term, yeah.
Well, it gives you a lot more perspective because you also have that element of the ambiance, the energy of the house, what it's like to be in an environment like that when the house is totally empty and the doors slam. And you walk into a different room and everything is all in a different place and nothing has moved and you heard no noise. Or, I love your cameras because you're an IT guy. And so you're looking at your cameras and it says kitchen and you're looking on the camera at the thing that says kitchen and you're looking at the bedroom. Oh, lovely. Aren't they fun?
I felt like the Twilight Zone those mornings when I did that. But and I program, I'm an IT guy, I program my cameras in advance. And I know the machinations involved to do something like that. If it was me sort of hacking into my own camera, switching MAC addresses, I would have to write a lot of scripts for that. I would have to do a lot of configuration. These spirits were able to do it in a relatively short period of time, almost instantly, once they realized what I was doing. And it drives you crazy, meaning me, because I have to reconfigure the cameras. And, of course, as you know, they took some and broke some. But, yeah, they run amok with the cameras.
Well, and that, okay, we'll get into more of that, because some of this got, it started out a little innocently. When you and Tina first went into the house, you heard a child coughing at the house. Again, you got in there, the landlord gave you a bottle of wine saying, congratulations, see you, bye, thanks for the contract, good luck.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I don't want to be in this house longer than I need to.
He was out of there. He was out. Yeah.
Might have had a clue. Okay, yeah. So there's the cough. You hear this, and so at that point, you got to, you did notice it, but it seemed innocuous.
Yeah, we noticed it, yeah. Yeah, we noticed it. We heard it at the same time. A male child cough echoed throughout the empty house, and we talked about it, Mantina, but we disavowed it because what else do we have to go on? And, that ended up, no pun intended, came back to haunt us, because once we start having physical activity, we reverted back to that kid cough that we heard 2 months prior. And we're like, oh, that's why kid toys are popping up out of nowhere, or that's why items are missing, chairs are moving. There's something here. And the kid cough was on day one of us getting the keys to the house. And, that was pretty scary if I relive that and think about it, yeah.
Okay, now, you're going to start a series here, but I want to go back into the stuff that's already up. Throughout the book, you say, hey, check out this video. Check out this evidence. Check out, do your own homework. And basically, you're saying, work with me on this. I can show you images. I can show you the things that we discovered. And there's also Demons in Seattle Uncovered, where this is another guy who went in and actually stayed, 2 weeks?
Don stayed 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, yeah.
Okay, so who is he for people who are listening?
Okay, so Don Phillips and Steve Murr, parapsychologist Steve Murr, are the guys that came in from the UK January and April of 2016. The Demons in Seattle Uncovered is Don Phillips' documentary. It's just their filming of their investigation of the two trips that they made and the evidence that they uncovered from trip one and trip two. I keep my trip one and trip two about 2.5 months apart. And the only reason why there was a trip two is because they just found so much evidence on trip one that it warranted a trip two, which they brought Nick Kyle from Scotland, the SSPR, to supervise and to witness and confirm the activity that they were witnessing while there.
Well, and it seemed like they were trying to be as thorough as they could and not give you any false hope or cover something if you were relating false information. They were trying to do a legit research. And he said the 5 hours for somebody to do a research and, come up with a conclusion was just a tad underdone, undercooked.
Yeah, and like you said, they came in to be very critical of the evidence, of the activity, and they just called it as they saw it. And once again, it was good for me to be standing behind them most of the time when phenomena was breaking out because, a lot of times, paranormal teams, the house occupant may disappear or go another room. He's like, hey, is something hokery going on? But a lot of what Steve and Don saw and witnessed and got on their equipment, I'm in plain sight. They can see me, and they know, okay, we know that door just opened by itself. Keith is right here. We know this object just moved over there. Keith is right here. And keep in mind, he's been reporting this for the last 4 years, so we can validate that. And Keith is on the up and up, and we're witnessing things for ourselves. So, yeah, they call it. I can see it.
Well, and see, you're pretty much a testimonial, walking, breathing, living, talking testimonial to what happens when you go through these kinds of experiences, and you're trying to legitimize it. You're trying to figure out, okay, connecting dots, A, B, C, D. But then when a drawer full of letters or invoices that you have, isn't your name isn't there, it's former tenants, appears in an empty drawer and all these things are there, you have to say, well, maybe the math and the things that you do to connect the dots aren't relevant. That's where it gets dicey. That's where it gets spooky. And the thing that was happening was these things were happening to you and Tina together and separate, and it didn't help the relationship. Okay, so I want to get into how that drew basically a wall between the two of you, and that's important because that energy feeds these kinds of beings, entities.
Yeah.
Okay, so coming back with more, Keith Linder and the Bothell House on KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Again, if you're not able to hear the entire show, just go check out the podcast. It's on Audio Boom right now. And there's, I think, 107 now in the archives. All shows that we've done, and Keith is in there because we talked to him the first time before he had the book written, and it was still kind of, a lot of this was still ongoing. And after 4 years, you learned a lot about yourself, and especially if you're with somebody in a relationship and you're undergoing something like this, it's an eye-opener because everybody deals with this stuff differently. Some people say, no, it's not happening, and they keep going day to day to day like nothing has changed. Other people say, what the heck? Call in the reinforcements. So this is what happened, basically. And if you're following along, it's a Bothell House. You can get it at Amazon. Kindle is good, or paperback. This is what happened with you and Tina. You guys go in and you're in a decent relationship. You've decided to move in together. Everything's, you know, kind of peachy keen. And that just starts taking us a little twist. What was the first thing that the two of you discovered you might be at different ends of the spectrum in terms of dealing with this?
One was in 2013 when the activity just abruptly stopped. And I felt that there was something, a presence still in the home. Tina didn't want to talk about it or look at it much. So we disagreed there. And then second, also, when the activity did return in 2014, the spring of that year, in a major way, we just started slowly but surely finding ourselves being at odds with each other, almost like being framed or entrapment, if you will, because keep in mind, we had churches helping us, clergy, priests, and whatnot, and when they would help us, they would tell us, you got to be united, you got to stay strong, you got to pray together, have faith, and whatnot. And a few days later, something would just pop out the blue to just derail me and Tina having a unison or united front, and by example, meaning finding female jewelry throughout the house, particularly in the hallway, staircase, and in the bedroom, the master bedroom. These jewelry items did not belong to Tina, and maybe they belonged to a previous tenant, we'll never know, but she would question me, and I've never seen them. But after two or three times of items appearing that are female jewelry, and we both traveled out of town a lot on our work, it became an angst because now she's suspicious not only about the activity happening around us, but also about the activity of her living boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And that would ensue arguments or finger pointing, or, you know, if you're upset with somebody or it's hard to pray with them, you know, it's hard to, and we're going to go pray together while I'm mad at you, I'm not praying with you. So that would derail, you know, what we were doing, our game plan. And then we would see the activity spike as a result of us giving each other the cold shoulder.
That's energy. It feeds on that energy.
Yeah,
so that was what I was, that divide and conquer kind of thing, because it goes in, it knows you. And the thing, they would call this in, you know, if with a paranormal term for a psychic or somebody would call it an apport, where it just comes, you can bring it in or, you know, remove it, whatever, it's an apport. And so that's what I was giving the example of with the documents that appeared in an empty drawer, and they're not yours, they have nothing to do with you, and yet here they are, out of the blue. That would be frustrating as a partner to not be solid, for one thing, in your relationship, but then to have these funky things happen on top of that and feel like you couldn't, there was nowhere to turn. There was no backup, because usually your partner's the one you're going to talk to.
Yeah, and you're powerless because we never know what to expect. I did it. Tina did it. And there were other moments in the house where I felt that certain things were orchestrated. There's a chapter in my book where I talk about the scratches on my car. And there were just some other, like, arguments were planned or predestined. And the house would erupt tremendously. I mean, we would go 2 weeks without activity, and we thought we had, you know, on the right path. And then something like an A-port, like you mentioned, happened. And then a disagreement happened. And then the house would blow up with energy. I'm talking about flying furniture, flying debris, projectiles.
You had an armoire.
I finally realized that we're being played, yeah.
There was a cupboard or an armoire that really took a beating. I think
multiple times.
Okay, yeah, yeah. By the time you got out of there, your furniture looked like it had been through a shipwreck.
Yes, yeah. I couldn't sell it as a rummage sale if I wanted to, yeah.
Okay, so we'll bring in the fact that that you had three Bibles. Now, this was, I'm saying, you said that you might have been inviting something because the three Bibles were open, kind of displayed. Was that just an accident you did that, or were you trying to prevent something, saying, here, look, read the Bible and you'll leave us alone? What was the thought with that? Because I know that from my own experience dealing with these kind of things, once the religious icons come out, then the entity says, okay, let's see you walk your talk. Are you legit? And then they test you. And if you aren't, the first thing you do is go, help, instead of going, I got this.
Well, see, the Bibles I had always owned, and friends, family, and the internet and clergy will say, you know, you have to display your religious items or paraphernalia openly. And so, yeah, we would pray. We would read out of Psalms or Proverbs, and the advice given was after you read out of that chapter or verse, leave it open to that page and put it on a coffee table or a bookshelf and just leave it out. The spirits hate that.
Yes, they do.
And then, yeah, they do. They really do. And so, yeah, then the Bibles went missing, and then they would be cut or catch fire when they returned to us, the three Bibles. And that was really, very hard because here I am, you know, you're trying to do one thing, and the spirits are taking it to another level with the method that you're trying, because once I saw my Bibles burn, I'm like, well, what can't they do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had crosses catch fire. I've had Bibles lit up. It doesn't seem to be working my, you know, steps to rid these things. And I know it's more mental and spiritual.
Yes.
Can I interject?
It seems to really... Keith, can I interject? It isn't the Bible. It's your belief. So any time something takes a physical object from you, it hasn't harmed you. And that's part of what this, I think, has been really, really coaching you with, by having you see that and you becoming more powerful, your own inner sense of this is happening, you can't take it away from me, you can't say I'm faking it, you can't say it's a fraud, yeah, because I've gone through this. And as you lost those Bibles, you drew that inner will, that inner security, and said, okay, I'm here. You know, so that's what I saw, was that facade that they kind of called you on, and then you had to internalize your own spirit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you have to turn internally because nothing else is really working. It's not so much about symbols, it's about substance.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we're battling enormous energies, me and Tina, the house, land, whatever. And a lot of what we do, you know, you do because TV tells you to do it. You know, you got to hang up crosses in every room. Where you got to light the house with white candles. And these are the Hollywood.
Yeah, that's bogus. Bogus. Don't go there. The thing is, if you are not solid in whatever that religion is, then basically it's a facade. It's window dressing. It's an accessory. When you are solid, those things really aren't as important because it's in you, and your energy is the barrier, the protection, plus that other element, that spirit, the God, that other element.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what the Hollywood stuff doesn't even go near. They don't get that part. Hang on a second. We're going to come back because what happened is you moved. And then I'd like you to share what happened when you moved into your new place, and we'll go from there, okay? Keith Linder, we're talking about the Bothell House. You can read the book, and you can get online and watch the videos. Spooky. KCMO Talk Radio.
Gonna be some sweet sounds coming down.
KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate whatever time you have to listen to give this one a thorough listen, and then check out the videos and the book, whatever you can find on the Bothell House. If you're interested in poltergeists, this is kind of like a one-stop shopping for all sorts of things that can happen, and what happens when it escalates, and what happens when relationships go south, and how that amplifies the energy. So the other thing too is you moved. You finally, there was one when they said, yes, this is the deal. It is haunted and it's not going away. Then you said, okay, fine, I am. And then you relocate, and what happens?
Yeah. So something interesting that I was familiar with due to my time in the Bothell House happened at my new location. I think it was day two. Matter of fact, I was heading for work. It was early in the morning. And I was at my computer desk, and all of a sudden I start hearing a tapping noise. And at first I ignored it, but after about 5 minutes of hearing this nonstop tapping, I turned to the left of me, and sure enough, there was drips of water coming from the ceiling hitting my kitchen table, my wood table. I got up, and there was a series of puddles on the table. We've had puddle phenomena, unexplained puddle phenomena at the Bothell House, but I didn't want to leap there yet because this time I'm in a condominium and there's neighbors above me.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's something with the plumbing or something's going on upstairs. And, of course, fast forward, we checked, I checked. I had the building maintenance people come over within maybe 30 minutes, and the puddle was still dripping for, the water was still dripping for that long. And nobody could explain where the water was coming from. They brought equipment in. There's no pipes between rooms, between the first and second floor. They did inspect the upper dwelling, the people let them in. There's no dishwasher, washer, aquarium, or anything. And, the leasing office and the property management both just wrote it as inconclusive. We don't know what caused it, but it never happened again. I mean, it never happened a second time. And there were other weird instances, probably a few weeks after that, of missing items, electrical issues. But this was over 2 years ago, and nothing's happened since then, since living where I'm living at now. I moved out in May of 2016, almost 4 years to the day when I actually moved in May 2012. But May of 2016, I had the puddles at my new place.
See, I think part of that is that this activity is sometimes a response or enabled by the person, and not saying you bring it on, but saying in a way you're open. Now that you have experienced it, you've kind of had a chance to get your feet wet and learn what to look for and how to respond. And even though you may not be conscious of that huge shift, the dynamic is there, and you become more of an advocate and somebody who can walk somebody else through this type of experience. That's what I see in your stories. And you've got, what, a couple more books you're going to come out with on this?
Yeah, and I do, at the end of this book, The Bothell Hell House, I do tell the readers the top 10 or 15 things to do and not do from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And, the other projects relate to my experience in the home. I'm a firm believer in each one teach one. There's a lot of things we did wrong that's going to save the next individual.
Yeah,
I could have very easily erected 20 cameras in my new place after the water puddle, and I probably would have been feeding into that or wherever it was and start this whole thing all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will test you, and they will see if you take the bait.
Yeah.
And you can sort of keep them at bay and minimum at bay with the less, the wrong type of attention given to them. But, multiple projects in and around the Bothell House and this, basically what I've seen and saw, and just trying to, each one teach one.
It feeds on your fear, and it feeds on that unknown element, because you guys were neophytes. You had no idea. You had no clue. It wasn't something that you had prepared for. It was like, holy cow, in your face. And so that first reaction, what I discerned from that was, it was protection. It was that that intimidation. All of a sudden, you had to, you know, protect your space. And so there was an anxiety and an animosity and an anger that was immediately triggered, and you're much more low-key now.
Yeah, you have to be. And that was one of the things the parapsychologist, that was a psychological aspect of their investigation. There's the physical and there's the psychological component that deals strictly with the house occupants. How to, I think Steve Mayer used the term, deal with vexation in the home, how to lessen it, if you will. It's not 100% foolproof, but it does help.
Mm-hmm.
Overreaction can tend to make things worse, and you're never going to be at these things on their terms. They're going to run donuts around you. There's nothing you can do. So the thing you do is sort of lessen it. And me and Tina at times did. Sometimes we have to leave and spend the night elsewhere when the activity just got too much. It was a lot of it's a learning curve involved. And that's the reason why a lot of documentation is out there on the internet from me, on YouTube and other sites, because I'm trying to widen that bell curve because it's pretty steep. Homeowners or home occupants are at a disadvantage with a lot of these entities because we just don't know. We cling to fear as our first reaction out of instinct.
And, well,
that's natural, but...
Well, especially if you've got property and you're invested. When I brought up that Skinwalker Ranch story, it's because they had no clue either, and nobody warned them. And they got there, and these funky things were happening, things that were completely, totally off the charts in terms of our normal, everyday reality. There was a, I think it was a post hole digger, and it was missing. He came in and he asked the kids, "Did you take that? Or, you know, did somebody know what happened to it?" They found it a while, you know, maybe weeks, days later, up in a tree 20 feet. Nobody took it. It just happened. And so things like that throw you off.
Yep.
And you have to figure out what is reality. And so from that, the people I see go through this are much more solid in their ability to tap dance around reality. And I think you bring a lot. You really bring a lot to the equation. I like what you're doing. I'm sorry you had to go through all that because that was absolutely a nightmare. But at the same time, you got a PhD in this kind of event activity, and more people. I know people who live in haunted areas who have to deal with this, and they don't talk about it because they don't want the looky loos. They don't want the criticism. They don't want the shame. They don't want the disbelief. And they don't know what to do. And you've got some good insight in helping people who are in these situations. Maybe get a breather and shift direction.
Yeah, it's definitely therapeutic for me to talk about it. And I meet people who went through something similar every day. I get an email from all over the world, people going through something similar, or a family or friend. And 9 times out of 10, there's not a happy ending at the end of it, but they are supportive. And it is good to see, because I'm a firm believer that talking is better, because that's the only way we're going to learn. And sort of understand. And the more you know, the more you are empowered. Because I was empowered, as you saw later in the book. When I started learning about poltergeist phenomena toward the tail end of the book, I became more empowered. I was like, oh, this has been happening since time began.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not just me.
Only person here. it's not just me. And from a psychological, that's important to know.
Yes.
No, it's not just you, Keith. You and Tina have nothing to do with this. Y'all just walked into a house in wrong place, wrong time. So it's not you. You made it 40 years on this planet without having anything like this. So it's just wrong place, wrong time. But, yeah, learn from it. Don't overdo it. And these things are been here before you, and they'll be here after you.
Hey, we got to wrap. Well, you've got places to go and things to do, and we're going to keep following and check out the YouTube channels and the book. Keith Linder, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. And it isn't over.
Nope, not over.
Bothell. Yeah, okay, so Bothell House is available. You can do Kindle, you can do paperback, and your YouTube channel, is it under Keith Linder or the Bothell House?
Both. You can find Keith Linder or just type in the Bothell House or the Bothell Hell House. And yeah, Kindle, paperback, or on Amazon. Easy to find.
I try not saying that word because, you know, it kind of invites opportunists. So I kind of go to the Bothell House and leave the extracurricular incentive.
You read my mind. That's why I didn't write it on the cover.
Yes, I thought so. I thought it's missing. You're smart. Okay. Hey, thank you. Thank you. Stay safe, stay sane, and stay curious. Wendy's Coffee House.
Okay.
See ya. See ya, Keith.
Thank you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.